Meeting now. This is Emily Cooper. Nice to see some of your faces and see most of your names. I hope you're doing okay during this rainy day. We are going to get started on our weekly call around affordable senior housing, and we thank you all for joining us. As I mentioned, I'm Emily Cooper. I'm the Chief Housing Officer at the Executive Office of Elder Affairs. I'm going to be moderating the call, but before I jump in, I don't want to assume people are Zoom experts. For those of you who are, I guess, in my age bracket, my family has been spending a lot of time talking about the show Zoom recently and singing a lot of Wadaliacha. So that is my thing for today. And if anyone can do the Wadaliacha on the phone, then you get extra points today. But the Zoom technology we're talking about is what Lynn from Leading Age, who is the wizards behind the curtain, making this all happen today. Thank you for your help with this. Lynn, can you tell people how to use Zoom?
Sure, yes. I decided to come out from behind the curtain today for this call. So good afternoon, everyone. So I'm just gonna walk through a couple of quick functionalities that we'll be using on today's call. So everyone who has come into this call, whether you're on the phone or on the computer, is muted. So if you have a comment or a question that you would like to share, you need to unmute yourself. If you're on your computer, you'll be able to unmute yourself by clicking on the small microphone icon at the bottom of your screen. If you are on the phone, you will be able to unmute yourself by pressing *6. And we do just ask, if you do unmute yourself, to remute yourself after you've made your question or comment to help us reduce on the background noise. So again, on the computer, clicking the little microphone icon, and on the phone, it's *6. For some other functionalities, for those on the computer, you'll see the little chat icon. That will bring up a sidebar where there's a text box that you can type in any questions that you have throughout the meeting. For those of you who are on the phone and have a question that you're not able to share by voice, if you're not able to kind of jump into the conversation or have an opportunity to ask, you can feel free to email me. My email is lmonaghan@leadingagema.org. Again, that's lmonaghan@leadingagema.org. I'll put that in the chat box too as well.
Thank you so much, Lynn. And I already see people putting fun facts about Zoom into the chat room. So thanks so much, everybody. As I mentioned, this is a state effort across multiple state agencies to really reach out to you all who are on the front lines. One of those state agencies is Mass Housing. Dave Ng, do you want to say hi to folks on the phone?
Sure. Thanks, Emily. Hi, everyone. So as we say every week, thank you so much for taking the time this week to join us for this call. And thank you all for the work that you're doing every single day to help the residents of the Commonwealth. So we really appreciate everything that you're doing. And please don't hesitate to reach out if we can be of any assistance beyond this call.
Thanks, Dave. We also have working with CDAC, Sarah Barkin. Do you want to unmute and say hello?
Hi, everybody. Sarah Barkin from CDAC. And I really just want to echo what others have said. We're just tremendously appreciative of all the work that all of you are doing, many in direct service to our older adults in the Commonwealth. And likewise, if there are ways that CDAC can be of assistance, please be in touch.
Thanks, Sarah. So we also are working with the State Department of Housing and Community Development, who will be joining us on this call. I also wanted to let you know that we have asked HUD to be part of these calls as well. So we may have some HUD representatives on the call. So I know there've been questions in the past. We're really trying to work together to get questions answered, to hear what's going on from you all and see if there are things that we can do at the state level to support you. To that end, we've established a few things as the working collaboratively. One is we have a listserv in which we have been sending out a variety of resources that come across our desk, whether it's developed by the state or a sample form or something about something that's coming from a local board of health. So we encourage you to join that listserv. You can do that by using our dedicated email address, which is seniorhousingcovid19@mass.gov. And hopefully somebody will put that in the chat room. Oh, somebody already did. Thank you. That email address will, if you put a question in there, it will get to Mass Housing, DHCD, CDAC. We will try and find you an answer. We will try and get back to you if you have an issue, if you want to share an experience. Also, we've asked that we have very little knowledge about your experiences at the local level with positive cases. So if you'd like to use that avenue as a way, that email as a place to report to us around, oh gosh, you know, we're seeing a ton of people with positive cases and we're really worried about X or Y. Clearly, totally optional. Please don't send us any confidential information, but we'd like to know what is going on, and that will help us figure out how to better deploy resources and advocate on your behalf. The last thing is that we have these weekly calls. They are all recorded and are posted online, and we will send you a link after this. We've had one on nutrition. We had one with the state medical epidemiologist talking about the actual disease. Last week, we had some folks who are on the phone talking about their experience. We're also always looking for topics. So if you have ideas or things that are coming up a lot, we will try and find someone to speak to that. Today's call, we are thrilled and very lucky to have Kelly Driscoll. Kelly Driscoll works at the Executive Office of Health and Human Services, and she is the lead liaison to the local boards of health for the new Commonwealth Community Tracing Collaborative. You may have heard a little bit about it. It is a new thing that has started between the Commonwealth and Partners in Health, which will focus on reaching out to the contacts of people who test positive as a way of stopping the spread of the virus. We're really lucky to have Kelly to speak today. She's gonna talk about, you know, what the Contact Tracing Collaborative is, how you as housing agencies or your residents can play a role in this contract tracing collaborative and effort and know how it's playing out in your community. So we're gonna turn it over to Kelly. She does have a PowerPoint that we're gonna run through and we will send to people afterwards, and folks on the phone, we will send that out to you. If you've registered for this call, you'll get it right afterwards. So Kelly, I'm gonna send it over to you.
Great, do you want me to share my screen?
No, I think Allison is gonna share her screen and show people slides.
Great.
She's working on that right now.
Hi, everybody. My name is Kelly Driscoll. As Emily mentioned, I am in the command center under Secretary Sutter's, which was stood up by Governor Baker mid-March, to really kind of work the collective Commonwealth response to the COVID-19 pandemic. In the command center, there are several different work streams. One's on testing, PPE, medical surge, and hospitalization. One of them is on contact tracing. And as Allison is setting up the PowerPoint, is it up there?
It's not. Allison, do you want me to share my screen? Oh, she's muted. You're muted, Allison.
So one thing that to think about is in our approach to really getting after this disease and the questions around when do we get to reopen? when does life go back to a new normal? There's three main things that we need to think about. And I've been thinking, you know, I've been explaining them as legs of a stool. So pardon the overused metaphor, but the first is testing. We need to make sure that we increase our testing capacity and can get after testing. Not just the folks that are highly symptomatic, but people beyond that. And that's being worked pretty aggressively in Massachusetts as well as nationally. We do have better testing capacity than we're using right now. What we don't have are the supplies for us to be able to do it. So the swabs, the reagents, and all of that thing. So we have that leg of the stool is there, but it needs to get stronger. Likewise, the second leg of the stool is having successful isolation and quarantine sites for people, especially folks in overcrowded living situations or the homeless or housing insecure. We do have a number of shelters stood up across the state, but that is another leg of the stool that we're starting to strengthen. And the third is contact tracing. And contact tracing is actually a very old way of handling pandemics. Kind of, it goes back ages when people would reach out to other people in their villages and say, hey, you know, Emily has this cough that is producing blood. Do you know if anyone's been around Emily? And they'll say, yeah, Lynn and Kelly have been. And so they'll go talk to Lynn and Kelly and say, hey, have you had these symptoms? Okay, if you get them, just let us know. Watch yourself for a couple weeks. And in the meantime, who have you been talking to or been in close contact with? And so then we're going to go see if they have the symptoms. So to really connect the dots of if something is an infectious disease that's transmissible, really reaching out on a human-to-human level, what's happening? And one thing that we are really lucky in the Commonwealth to have is Partners in Health, who's done this on a global scale in West Africa with Ebola, with tuberculosis and cholera in Haiti. And so we were lucky enough to partner with them on setting up what we're calling the Community Tracing Collaborative, which builds on what local boards of health do in terms of outreach in contact tracing to make it a big statewide effort. Contact tracing has happened, and it has been happening for the past length of time that all of us have been working in government or in associated agencies. People that have tuberculosis are contacted by their local boards of health and are checked in on regularly. People with sexually transmitted diseases are contacted and asked about who their partners are to help stop the spread at that level. So this is not a new function. The scale of it is new. And the needs associated with not only having COVID-19 and how hugely impactful it can be on a health level, but also in the midst of an incumbent recession, when people need so many other different supports, led a way to having a much stronger approach from the state level. Next slide. So this is from a previous presentation. I'm the only one presenting today, but just so you can know who the partners here are. So this is being governed and by the command center. Obviously, Governor Baker is the ultimate decision maker. But for us to stand this up, there was a couple of functions. Number one, we had to use the system of record, which is called MAVEN. It's the Massachusetts Viral Epidemiological Network, MAVEN, and it's run out of DPH. This is the system that, like I said, local boards of health have used to track TB and STDs and everything. It's the system of record. It has a ton of important, really personal information. And so we knew that we needed to have a tracking system that could sit as a sister system to MAVEN, but not compromise the integrity of such. So to do that, we leveraged the Health Connector, who has two really pieces of good specific experience that were so important here. Number one, standing up a system that can mirror what we do in MAVEN. And number two, having a call center. The Health Connector is our healthcare exchange. So it's our version of Obamacare in the state. And they have been incredibly effective at getting people enrolled in the healthcare exchange, despite kind of all the obstacles that have been thrown their way lately in healthcare exchanges. They outpaced the rest of the country. So they're incredibly good at utilizing a call center functionality, getting the word out and getting people to pay attention to it. Who staffs the call center? That's where we brought in Partners in Health. Partners in Health is standing up about an army about 1,000 people to do outreach and contact tracing, to do the basic kind of, oh, Emily seems to have symptoms, who's Emily been in touch with type work. And also, if Emily has a positive test case, then Emily, who were you around for the 48 hours prior to your positive test result? They get the names and numbers of those people, and they do outreach to those people that are contacts. So there's two different types of people. One's a case, that's if they have a positive test result, and then there's contacts, which are individuals that are in close proximity to said person within the 48 hours of a positive test result. Partners in Health is leveraging their experience doing this globally to provide trainings, support, and the hiring function of these folks. These are good paying jobs. It's also a workforce initiative. We've had 34,000 applicants for 1,000 positions. And so we've been able to be selective and get people that have nursing backgrounds, social work backgrounds, and also live in the parts of Massachusetts that they will be serving so that they know the community and they know what other resources are around to help support folks, not just with COVID, but with the other social supports that they might have. And then, of course, the Department of Public Health is I think when you said the chief epidemiologist, you were talking about Dr. Brown, Katie Brown. So she is a part of this team, as well as Jillian Haney, who is the head of MAVEN, and Kevin Cranston, who is the Bureau Director for Infectious Disease and Laboratory Sciences. So it's this team together that has stood up what we're now calling the Community Tracing Collaborative. Next slide. So this was the goal of last week's presentation, but they're kind of the same, is to orient you guys around the entities that comprise the CTC, I think I just did that, to talk about what role the local boards of health are going to be playing moving forward. We wanted to give them concrete guidance around MAVEN. They're used to working in MAVEN, and so they obviously want to know how the system is going to interface with MAVEN. And then to get towns to say, yes, this sounds like a great thing, like come in and help us. I'll get to that in a second about the towns that haven't said that yet, but if there was any questions. So likewise, you know, I think the goal of today's presentation is to orient you guys around what the CTC is, to problem solve with you around response rate, especially among our aging population, and to see if you guys have ideas about how we could better reach folks that don't necessarily have smartphones, or use them as much, but kind of what means of communication are they best most responsive? Next slide. So again, there are a number of entities that are involved in building this up. I gave you kind of the high level ones. The tool that we're using is called Salesforce, and that's the sister system to MAVEN, and that's being developed by Accenture under the advisement of the connector. Buoy Health is a website that anyone can go to in Massachusetts and enter their symptoms. It will tell you, hey, you should probably just rest and keep an eye on yourself for the next couple of weeks, or number two, click this button, you can have a telehealth consult right now and they can tell you what to do. Or three, and this is really in cases where there's a significant respiratory issue, you should probably go to the hospital. So that's buoy.com. If anyone doesn't know about that yet, it's gone out in a number of email blasts from the 888-777 number that the Gov stood up, but it's a tool for anybody. And so we're ultimately going to try to leverage that technology and getting back to people on symptom checkers, and that's why they're involved. Next. The data science people would tell you, this is what we're trying to do is get R below one. If without any interventions, which is the left side of the screen with the R equals 3.88, you without any interventions, every one person would infect about 3.88 people that they come in touch with every day. With social distancing, that is significantly decreased. However, social distancing without expanded testing capacity and contact tracing is still above one. It's only with the appropriate testing and contact tracing that Wuhan and South Korea were able to get their R below one. And so using this as our model, we just used it to emphasize the importance of standing up a contact tracing effort in association with all the other things that we're doing. Contact tracing is more proactive, whereas the other stuff can be pretty reactive. You have symptoms, let's get you tested, is reactive, but you have been in touch with someone that has positive, how are you feeling, is more proactive. And so it takes both to really get our hands around it and get that R below one. Next. So again, these are like the pillars, right? Is testing, making sure people have isolation and quarantine, tracing. And then the fourth component is support, is really, you know, we might be able to get our arms around the testing, tracing, and isolation, but if you're food insecure, if you suffer from mental health issues, if you're in an environment where you don't feel safe due to any kind of abuse, it's really kind of understanding the support needed. And so as we're going to go through kind of the people that are being hired, you'll see that a key piece of standing this up is not just the call center functionality and kind of getting our hands around what's going on with the disease progression through talking to people, but also the what else do you need and how can we help you get that through the direct human-to-human contact. Next. So there's three different types of people. The first is a case investigator. This is when someone comes into the queue via Maven that they have a positive test result. And just as an aside, Maven finds out about positive test results because labs report them directly into Maven. So Maven gets a positive test result and the case opens up as part of the queue as, okay, Emily, I'm sorry to keep picking on you, but I'm going to pick on you. Emily has COVID. The case investigator gets on the phone with Emily and says, hey, I know you just got you just had a positive test result. Let's talk about what that means. Let's talk about your ability to safely isolate in your home or other area. And then can you also tell me who you had contact with the 48 hours prior to that test result? Emily will tell us those people. And we will ask her if she feels safe doing so. Can you please text them and let them give them a heads up that we'll be calling them too. Then we call those contacts and we say, how are you feeling? We will say you have had contact with someone with COVID. We will not say it's Emily because if someone is not safe, Emily wouldn't have texted them in advance and we won't, tell them that it's her. If that's an unsafe dynamic. We will tell them that they had exposure to someone with COVID. Soon, we will be able to say, because of your known contact, even if you're asymptomatic, you can go get tested yourself so that we can better get our hands around how it's spreading from person to person, even if symptoms aren't present. But right now, it's more kind of situational awareness and you've been in close contact, please quarantine. And watch your symptoms. And then there is a regular check-in with both cases and contacts about for the next 14 days, how are you doing? How is it, like, have you noticed anything new? And then after the 14 days, the case is kind of closed so that we can understand where the disease has been and where it stopped. This is all super important for us to consider if we're going to be thinking about reopening the economy, kind of where the disease has been, where it stopped, where there might be herd immunity developing, et cetera. The third position is the care resource coordinator. And so these are the folks that work, they're assigned to specific towns, and they work with those towns to understand what are the resources in the area that they can connect folks with if they need them. These people provide kind of the trauma-informed, social worky type follow-up with cases or contacts that through our conversations with them have indicated that they have greater needs beyond just knowing that they have been exposed to COVID. Next slide. So this is kind of a deep dive on the three positions that I just told you about. I think we can kind of skip through these and you can have them in your slide deck moving forward. But the general overview is the functions of these people. all three of them are working with specific zip codes or geographical areas. So like they start to get to know their local boards of health. If a particularly tough case comes up, someone that's in a congregate care setting, so this applies to a lot of you guys, a case that is kind of, there's comorbidities or other complications, the CTT team reaches right back out to the local board of health and works alongside them on the case. And the local board of health kind of owns the case because of their experience and their knowledge of the people in the community. So the CTC is taking a lot of cases. Some of them, depending on their complexity or the nature of where the person lives, go back to the local board of health to be addressed.
Kelly, since you paused for a second, I just want to let folks know that for people who are on the phone, we just emailed you the PowerPoint. So if you want to move ahead, we're actually on slide 8.
I actually think we can be on slide 10. So as I said, high priority cases remain with the local board of health because of their ongoing relationships with and knowledge of the community. The high priority cases include congregate care settings. A DMH or a DDS facility, or any facility that has a congregate care shared bathroom type situation. We did get a list of all of these from the Executive Office of Elder Affairs. So they are in our database vulnerable populations that we will work alongside the local board of health to address. Clusters, healthcare workers, it's developing the relationship with the locals about how to know when to have a case go back to the locals or one that's kind of relatively easy. And a relatively easy case would be, you know, I get a test, it's positive. Someone calls me and says, hey, you've got a positive test. Can you safely quarantine? I'm a rule follower. So I'll be like, yes, I can do that. Okay, I understand. I'll tell them my contacts. I don't indicate that I have anything complicated associated with my case. Versus ones that are more complicated. We anticipate that the majority of the cases, like 80%, aren't as complicated. However, in congregate care settings, as you guys know, once one person has it, it is incredibly likely that somebody else gets it, and then it kind of quickly. And so that's something that we would be working directly with local boards of health on. And so you guys and your functions, if you hear about this type of thing, it still probably will come from the local board of health because they're really the experts on their community and they'll be reaching out to the congregate care settings to talk about it. So part of our challenge right now, frankly, is people picking up their phones. If you're like me, you get a lot of spam calls and you send them to voicemail or you block them. And so what we're trying to do and what I'd love to hear your feedback on is get the word out with regard to how important this is, not only for themselves and their contacts, but also kind of for the state to understand where this disease is and how it's progressing. And so you're going to start seeing some media about this on kind of all forums. We're trying to get the word out is if you get a call and the caller ID says mass COVID team, pick up. It is important. A couple things. And this is something really important for seniors that are targets of a lot of this stuff. There's scammers out there. And so we're also trying to let people know, please answer the phone. And we will never ask you for your social security number or health insurance information, because apparently people are calling and saying they're the CTC. And getting people's socials and whatnot. So we're trying to get ahead of that as well. But there's just an overall challenge of getting people to pick up the phone. And if we can't get that, then it's hard for us to do kind of the larger work of getting R underneath one. because it's harder for us to get the full picture of things. So we're enabling texting tomorrow. So we'll be texting people in advance of calling them. And also kind of texting as follow-up. But if you guys have particular ideas around how to reach an aging population and get them to answer. So essentially that is it. It's a huge concept. I appreciate your time and I'm happy to take questions.
Thanks, Kelly. Wow, this is really cool. You mentioned, I just have one question, because you mentioned towns need to say they want to do this, and how many towns are doing that, and what is that, like, what if they don't say they're going to do this, like, what does that mean?
Yeah, so there's been a three-phased approach. So the first phrase was kind of like towns that were underwater, and wanted to come in right away, and those were, so part of it is, as we're staffing up to 1,000 people, we can't take everyone at once, right? So as we started to staff up, we took the towns that most needed it. And that was where the initial staffs kind of got aligned to. And then this week we are working with reaching into towns that have a ton of cases that kind of are just sitting in Maven and saying, hey, we noticed that you have a lot of cases in Maven that you haven't been able to get to. Can we help you? Starting tonight, actually, this is a big day. There's a drop-down in Maven that right now towns can go in and say, yes, please take my case, or no, I'll keep it. And basically, towns that say no, I'll keep it can just work the cases and nothing goes to the CTC. That will remain the same. But starting tonight, if a town says, yes, please keep my case, or it's just left blank, it goes to the CTC. So there's no cases just sitting in Maven. And so towns, if they get to all their cases, they may not interact with the CTC that much. However, if cases are kind of sitting in Maven and languishing, the CTC will take them, and the towns will have read-only access to them, so they know that it's over there, but they'll be addressed. Because as we all know, part of this is you need to get on it really quick, because anyone that's been exposed to them, the longer you wait to get in touch with them, the longer the exposure's been, and the more people that person might have been in contact with. And so time is of the essence.
So we're getting a lot of conversation in the chat room here, Kelly, with some ideas. You have on the phone with you people who are literally in the housing with large groups of people and working with them. And it seems like some of them have already advertised. I'm looking, put together a newsletter with this kind of information and getting it out to their residents. Or if you have some sort of media package or flyers, they would be happy to get the word out, so they can give it to all the residents so they'd be prepared for calls. But there was a question, what happens if you call a senior and they don't remember who they've been in contact with? You know,
yeah.
That comes up a lot, or maybe they went to the market and they were in contact with everybody, you know, so how do you handle those situations?
So the primary function of calling someone with a positive test result is to check in with them and make sure that they can safely isolate for 14 days. Getting their contacts is also an important piece. The people in the field have said is that a lot of people come home with this positive test case and they're scared and they feel really alone. The first call actually ends up taking like a half hour to 45 minutes, because a lot of the times it's kind of like someone being like, thank you so much. I don't know what to do with this information, right? And so talking them through kind of clinically how to handle themselves. And we all know that human memory is not great. It's not just seniors, although seniors, you know, it's exacerbated in many seniors. And so we're relying on the information that they are able to give us, and it might not be perfect, but it's something. One of the things that you guys might have heard about is that Apple and Google are working on this big app to enable Bluetooth to be able to kind of anonymously ping people if they've been in touch with someone that has COVID. And that's something that is an interesting concept. It would require a lot of people to turn the Bluetooth on, which is not a guarantee, but so there's that. I also know, like, I'm thinking about my grandfather, like, he never had a smartphone. He had a flip phone and wouldn't know how to open a text if his life literally depended on it. So, you know, working with the aging community needs a different approach there too. But I think the direct answer to your question, Ms. Victor, is that making the initial case trace is worth it no matter what, even if they can't remember their contacts, because it is kind of getting their hands around who is infected. And so there's an epidemiological benefit for the state, even if we're not able to get our hands to play around the contacts.
And what about translators? You see a question in there. Some people will just hang up if they hear English.
Yeah. So there are translators. Many of the people that we've been hiring are bilingual or multilingual, and they are assigned to, like, Portuguese speakers assigned to the Fall River area, for example. But yeah, I mean, that's a tough one, if people hang up because of the language. What we do have, and people are asking for the materials, and I'm happy to share them, we do have the materials in many different languages, and so that might be helpful if they see it in their language of origin and then get a call from that number, or the caller ID says Mass COVID team, that might be helpful in some areas.
And then it seems, you know, just some people just don't have phones, right? Yeah. So that's where we hit the wall on this. As you mentioned, your grandfather, my mother-in-law has a phone, does not know how to use it. You know, one thought is that a lot of the healthcare providers are moving to telehealth, and they are kind of working with the person on how to get up to speed on an iPad or easier technology. Has there been any thought? I know that there are virtual, not even telehealth, but virtual pets and other things that go in and have an electric or technological interaction with the person and leveraging those. Has there been any thought to that? Thinking outside of phones.
Yeah, no, at this point in time, no. Okay. And like I said, most of this has been done before COVID in like a village to village type way. And so we're in a kind of a new world in general in terms of contact tracing. And so I think there's going to be a lot of lessons learned, but we know that a limitation for us is that it is relying on phones and people answering them.
Right. So I think I knew that this question was going to come up. A lot of time has been spent with this group saying this person's positive, and they've been told to quarantine or stay in their apartment, and they're not. Or even before not being positive, other people were not practicing safe practices. You're going to be calling them every day for those 14 days. What happens when they say, oh, I went out, or I did this, or, you know, or if one of the folks on the phone knows that they're doing those things, is there any sort of, what's the role of the CTC in that, I guess?
That those cases would get referred back to the local board of health, because the local board of health has authority to, write a cease and desist letter to that individual that they have been ordered to isolate. And then if need be, and, you know, like I said, like 99% of people aren't going to be like this, but a cease and desist letter out to folks, and then if need be, get a injunction from Superior Court. So the point of what I'm saying is that local boards of health have the authority in a health emergency to enforce isolation and quarantine orders.
Okay. And we've told folks on the phone, and we've been told that they should really be working proactively with their local boards of health. So they should keep doing that, right? They shouldn't say, oh, well, the contact tracing collaborative is going to be doing this. They should still keep working with the local board of health on these things.
Yeah, and the local board of health is in close contact with the contact tracing collaborative too.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, Lynn, go ahead, Kelly.
Your local board of health does so much more than contact tracing too, so absolutely stay in touch with them.
Lynn, I was just wondering if any questions have been coming in the email. I see them on the chat room.
No, none in email yet.
Okay. Is there anyone who'd like to unmute their phone and ask Kelly a question?
So just a reminder.
Say who you are.
Yep. And a reminder, anyone on the phone, use *6 to unmute.
Yep. Can I make a suggestion, please?
Only if you tell us who you are.
Jerry Halberstadt, Stop Bullying Coalition. I'm a tenant in one of these wonderful buildings. First, what a great program. Complicated, and what an amazing presentation. Thank you. In a building like where I am, there are people who, you know, aren't going to listen, aren't going to respond. If you want to reach out to someone and they're not willing to communicate, or they have a language barrier, what about a social work? Could you engage a social worker or someone in management who could reach out to that person and facilitate your discussion with a case tracing? Would that be a way to break down some of those barriers? And thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. Yeah, so I think that's a really good point. And that comes back to making sure that if someone is in a senior living environment, that the address on their test results is filled out to that environment. I think part of what's been happening is that folks that are in nursing homes or assisted living are putting the home address where maybe their spouse lives or they're keeping in the family, rather than the address of the nursing facility. And that makes it difficult to know, hey, heads up, this person is in a congregate care situation. We need to talk to congregate care leadership about how to approach this. So there's that as a primary thing that we're working on kind of behind the scenes to make sure that the people that are ordering the test from these congregate care facilities, nursing home and assisted living, through the National Guard or not, are putting the right address in. And that would actually trigger local Board of Health involvement, and the local Board of Health would reach out to the individual in the congregate care setting, and if they're having a hard time getting through to them, Jerry, would kind of work it from the social work management side of things. So there's two big things that need to happen. One, the address needs to be right, so that it kind of, it literally will raise a flag in Maven, like this is an address associated with congregate care. And kind of the relationship between the local and the facility needs to kind of be engaged at that point.
So Kelly, I think just to add to that, I think where Jerry lives, and and other people on the phone, is really an apartment building, right? And there might be somebody who is known sometimes as a resident service coordinator who kind of does what your care resource coordinator does, let's say, like for everybody in the building. You know, anybody stops by, they, you know, need help with their food, they need to figure out how to get to this doctor's appointment. They're just sort of supporting and providing programming for the whole building, but it's really an apartment building. So there is no healthcare mechanism.
Got it.
But they are they're very well positioned to be helping you with this effort. But I think my question actually is underlying is, what are the protocols around sharing information about positive cases or contact? Like, could you say this person tested positive and there's somebody in this building with them who is part of the contact tracing, but I can't reach them. So I happen to know, because Emily gave me a list, that so-and-so, Debbie is the resident service coordinator. I'll reach out to Debbie, who can get me on the phone with this person who won't pick up the phone. How does the information sharing protocols work?
So no, we can't disclose names of individuals. And so it is a lot of working the relationship with the individual and trying to get them to say, let me go talk to my resident service coordinator. Of course, if the individual puts you, the resident service coordinator, on the phone with me, then the conversation can happen, but we can't disclose names.
So really, what would be helpful for you is that these folks who are working with them get the word out, like, these people might call, pick up the phone, and come see me if you want. Would it be, one of the questions is, would it be helpful for you to have the addresses of all the buildings? And I can share with you offline, Kelly, some of those addresses. But I think that doesn't get to the you still, that doesn't, you might know there's elderly people living here, but that doesn't get them to pick up the phone. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
Somebody asked what the caller ID is going to show.
I'll type it in.
Okay. Does anyone else who's on the phone want to unmute themselves and ask a question?
I'll ask a question.
Go ahead, Sarah.
Sarah from CDAC. Thank you. Really, really excellent presentation. I think I understand you correctly that what you're focused on is if there's a positive case, it's sort of that 48-hour window of contacts that folks have had. Mm-hmm. So that certainly speaks to reaching them pretty fast.
Quickly.
Once they've had that positive case. Is there then a period of time after which, well, if you couldn't reach them, it becomes kind of irrelevant? You know, I'm just trying to think about this window of time and any work you could be doing, you know, with contacts at that address, even if you can't share the individual name, and how important that might be.
Yeah. So there definitely, if you were to look at the bell curve of like when it's impactful to reach people, there definitely is like it's a pretty quick up and down, and it is a number of days. However, in terms of understanding where the disease has been and spread, there's a important piece to do it even after that bell curve has passed, to kind of be able to geolocate kind of pockets of where the disease has been. But obviously the speed of human takes a test to CTC gets in touch with said human and then gets in touch with the contacts. Like, we need to get that tight. And that's actually one of the things that we talked with the administration about this morning, of that that's a big metric that we really need to get to. You know, and we stood this up 3 weeks ago, so we're not there yet. But, you know, it is something that it's definitely something we need to keep our eye on.
So, Kelly, what if within those 48 hours I said, oh, well, the maintenance man came in and fixed my toilet into my apartment? Would you call that maintenance man or the employer of the, to find out who the maintenance man is? How does that work?
We would try to get the information for the maintenance person and call them, because they've touched surfaces and whatnot in the home of someone that definitely has a positive case. We would not call the employer to get that information. We would try to get it either through the case or kind of doing a little bit of investigation kind of behind the scenes. Google.
Yep. Emily, yeah. This is Kim. Is it all right if I ask a question?
Sure.
Hi, Kelly. This is Kim Brooks from Heber Standing Life. Hi. I know you talked a little bit about the case when we don't have the name, or you can't share the information about who it is that's positive, but it's often the case in these settings where we as the housing provider do know who's positive, and as Emily was talking about, have a ton of information about, you know, we have the log that shows every single private aide who's come and gone. We know every staff member who's been in or out of that apartment. We know who their friends are, if they've kind of cheated on our quarantine and are going apartment to apartment. So how do we get connected with you to be part of the contact tracing when we really do have all that information and we already do know that the resident's positive? And will there be, I guess, a focus? I know to date we've been doing that on our own because the public health departments obviously have been so overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. But is there more we can do, or more tools you could give us to help in that work?
Yeah, so the positive individual would need to make the direct connection between like you and me, Kim, to be able to talk to you and get the information on those people. And I think that would be helpful if you guys could communicate with your residents about, if you get a call from these people, answer. And if you don't remember or you need help, like give them permission to talk to me. And I can help give them the names of the personal care attendants and whatnot.
And I guess just a follow-up, will there be any sort of contact tracing that is community specific, especially for senior communities where we have such an opportunity here to have impact in so many legs of the stool that you talked about, if we could take a broader community approach as opposed to the individual approach? I know you're just kind of standing the whole thing up right now. It just seems like a huge opportunity that we might be missing if we don't get there quickly.
And Kim, when you say community, you mean like I have a building with 250 seniors in it.
Right, right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, under one roof, you know, hundreds of seniors.
Yeah, sharing the same elevator and whatnot. Yeah. Let me take that back to the team. Now, all of this is like their origin point for anything is a positive test result. There's no kind of community and part of it is that we don't want to make assumptions about communities because trying to figure out how this is epidemiologically going through these various communities is part of kind of the what we're doing with contact tracing. But let me ask, because I do think that's a good thought, and I don't know how to do that without violating people's health privacy.
Kelly, there was a question about people signing releases sort of proactively now. Like, I can sign a release that says, if somebody calls me from the contact tracing collaborative, you have my permission to talk to Kim. I don't know if that helps. Debbie, you wanted to say something and then we're gonna.
Yeah, this is Debbie Cutler from Two Life Communities, and I certainly echo second what Kim is sharing. You know, we, as I know HSL does, we have on our website, you know, available to the public, we're posting certainly not any personal identifiable information, but, you know, the buildings and the number of positive cases, you know, so that information is available. I mean, that's available to the public, anyone who goes to our website. We're okay. Updating that weekly and, you know, and keeping it current.
Okay.
So some of these things, it sounds like there might be some, as you said, Kelly, you were looking for ideas, and maybe out of this, if people have ideas that they want to share with me, Emily Cooper, or mail, email to seniorhousingcovid19@mass.gov. We will make sure we would pass those along to Kelly and she'll get in touch with you if things make sense. I am conscious of time and we have a few minutes left. I want to just switch gears to a different leg of the stool for 1 second, which is on-site, which is testing, and just preview for you that Elder Affairs and the state housing agencies have been hard at work with putting in place a protocol that we hope will hit the street soon for doing on-site testing in affordable senior housing. And that would be supported through the National Guard or with EMS teams. So that is something we hope will be coming out in the next few days. It is going to require that your housing property make friends with a healthcare entity, whether that it's the community health center or the local hospital or a physicians group that serves a lot of people in your building, because that health entity is going to need to prescribe the actual tests, be there the day that the National Guard comes, and be the agency that gets the healthcare results and communicates them to the residents, provides follow-up care. So I just wanted to preview that. It should be coming out any day now, and we will get that out on our listserv to you. Requests will be made through the seniorhousingcovid19@mass.gov website. But just to get you started thinking about who might be potential partners in your community, or if you're not sure of who would be a partner, talking to your local officials, talking to your elected officials, talking to your Board of Health, seeing, you know, talking to the local hospitals, trying to see if there would be entities, the local community health center, who would be willing to partner with you on this effort. So I'm seeing some people had mass testing done last week and it was super efficient and great, so that's good. So I'm hoping we can bring that. We're gonna be looking at places, prioritizing places that have positive cases already, because this will probably be, you know, your one time to get the testing done. And then I think the overarching question is, if you're doing the testing, what happens what do you do with the results? There were some questions about, you know, how much more can you lock down a building? How much more can you tell that resident to stay in their apartment? And so this really also needs to involve the local Board of Health, who has the ability to enact those kinds of measures. But I wanted to preview that for you in the last few minutes. So we have I'm happy to take, I see a question about, will the testing include residents and staff? It would include residents and staff that are that work in that building. So not like your whole staff, but if you have property people, or you could include staff in that building as well. So we have a few minutes left to ask Kelly questions or me with that little preview. I don't know if I got to everything in the chat room or people on the phone want to unmute and ask a question.
Emily, I think there was a question that wasn't answered that it, from somebody, if a resident leaves the property for a non-COVID issue and spends time in a rehab nursing facility, can a test be required before returning to the senior property?
I would suggest that you ask your funder, whether that be Mass Housing, DHCD, or HUD, that question, because I don't regulate or oversee your property. I'm not going to answer that. Was that political, diplomatic enough? But in general, since people can be you know, positive and stay in their apartments, I think that my guess is they have the right to be in that apartment. But I am not going to go on record with that. I would suggest you talking to the folks who fund you and asking them. If you want to submit the question to senior housing, COVID-19 at mass.gov, I'll get it to the right agency. Were there other questions in there or on the phone? So somebody asked about the on-site testing. Is the testing voluntary and who submits the request? The request is going to be submitted as a by the housing property. It could be the owner, the property manager, with specific information about who your partnering healthcare agency is, who's going to be the provider, the prescriber of the tests, and get the results back. And then is the testing voluntary? It is voluntary for residents in that building. We're going to encourage you to try and get as many residents as possible. And I encourage you to talk to the local Board of Health about how to word that in such a way that people are encouraged to participate. So for example, your local Board of Health may say, well, the person in unit 1 and the person in unit 3 said volunteered to get tested. If they come back positive, we may quarantine the person in unit 2 as well, given the way the layout is of the building. And that may lead to the person in unit 2 volunteering to be tested. So this is really a community effort between the Board of Health, a local healthcare entity, and the housing property. So my goal is for next Thursday's call to have this policy of on-site testing being the focus of the call. Fingers crossed that government can move that quickly, and we can go into all the details for that. Any last questions for Kelly before we get off? All right, well, I want to thank everybody on the call. Thank our folks at Leading Age who make this so easy to do. Thank Kelly. This is fascinating as well as really useful. And if anybody has any questions or follow-up information, senior housing COVID-19 at mass.gov. We will send out the recording to all of you later today, as well as all sorts of resources. And take care, stay safe. Thanks, everyone.